Desert Community Energy, May 21st, 2018.
After budget year three, we'll be able to afford 1.4 BC. It's going to take a while.
It's a cash flow issue. No, no engraving. Okay, we got to do it. Okay, we're calling to order at 2:30. We have the roll call.
We're all here.
We'll just say.
Okay.
Any public comments?
I do have one. Okay. My name is Kim Floyd. I live here in Palm Desert. I'm a Sierra Club activist. Generally, I will try to differentiate if I'm talking for the Sierra Club or for myself. In this case, I'm speaking for the Sierra Club, and it's relates to a bill. It's AB 813, but it's the question of regionalizing the management of energy across the West with some other states. And the governor has been pushing it. It's been around for probably 18 months, and it's in a couple of committees. The Sierra Club has not taken a position on the bill. But we do have an energy climate committee of the Sierra Club on a statewide basis that has lots of, from my perspective, really knowledgeable people about these kinds of issues. Lots of community choice aggregation experience up in Northern California. And they are concerned, those folks specifically, not the Sierra Club yet, but those folks are concerned about giving up local control as you move it away from, currently it's California, and we're trying to bring it down to local, and this would move decision-making at some level to FERC, the federal agency. One of our concerns is it includes states that have lots of coal, and, you know, so there's a mix that we might not be happy with locally. And I don't know if this group has a legislative advisor or somebody that chases these things. CalCCA is currently in a position that the Sierra Club probably will not eventually agree with unless they change their position. So I'm just suggesting that if we're relying 100% on CalCCA, our local group might want to understand this well to then use their counsel or not. Thank you.
Thanks. It seems to me we might want to have a discussion about AB 813.
I'll check in. I'm not even familiar with CCA's position, frankly. I'll check in after the meeting, and if this is something that ought to be addressed at your next meeting, we could agendize it.
Okay. Yeah, and we passed the assembly last year, and on the 17th this month, a couple of days ago, it's re-referred to in the Senate. Yeah, to several committees.
Yeah, they haven't passed it.
Yeah, so we just got re-referred out.
Don or Jeff, do you have any information on? Yeah. Been focusing on just getting started.
First is coming quickly, so.
All right.
Okay. Do we have any board member or director comments?
Will we be discussing this and kind of a rollout in the context of the progress report?
Yes.
Okay, that takes us to consent calendar. Do we have a motion to approve the minutes for April 16th?
So moved.
Second.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
And minutes are approved.
And we'll start with the rollout, and I'll end with Jeff giving an update on our procurement for essentially our first years of supplies, and then I'll fill in between on some of the other things like PCIA, but you have the report and a whole lot more to offer there. Erica, do you want to give an update on the plans for a rollout? And you see we passed out the first letter We've got something we'll show you on the screen as well.
So following up on our discussion from the last board meeting, we are implementing our outreach plan. Ben is going to pull up a short video that if you have Facebook or you're on the internet, you will start seeing in the next couple of months.
Palm Springs, Cathedral City, and Palm Desert have teamed up to form your new electricity provider, Desert Community Energy. Desert Community Energy will work with SoCal Edison for delivery and customer service. That means local businesses and residents will get cleaner electricity at lower rates. You'll be automatically included in your rate saving plan, but you can choose to go even greener. Lower rates, cleaner electricity, voter control. Learn more at desertcommunityenergy.org.
So the rollout of this, of the 30-second commercial will start in conjunction with the first enrollment letter, which you see, that goes out, starts, the first batch goes out on June the 4th. Our website will have all the interactive features and be live around June the 1st. So if you read through it and want more information, you can go to our website and find that information. And as I mentioned during our last update on community engagement, the ad will be very targeted, so we were really making sure that we're reaching customers in the three cities and not doing very broad approach. And we've also been working with your individual cities. We're finalizing our newsletter content, and which will be starting to get distributed. So throughout June, you'll start seeing information to simply bolster what people are getting in their mailboxes.
Again, I've got a few other items to give you an update on, but I assume you might have some questions or comments about this.
I do. I don't see on this letter a telephone number to call with questions. There's a number to use for opting out. Is that also a number for questions? The reason I'm concerned is if there's no number for questions, that says to
opt
out.
Not just, oh, I see. Okay.
Because if it's not clearly and largely presented, folks will call City Hall. So it would be really helpful if there's
That's
a number for questions boldly.
Sure.
I was thinking the same thing.
So this enrollment letter is at the printer. So if we can't catch the bolding for the first one, we will certainly do better for the second round.
That's disappointing. And I don't see that it lets people know how long they have to opt out. Because the typical person puts things in a pile to take care of. So.
One of many piles.
Yeah.
Based on urgency.
So,
you can actually opt out at any time.
Yeah.
So there is no.
Do we want to urge them to be in touch by some particular time so that our planning is facilitated?
I wouldn't put any sense of urgency in this. This is, would be very few that opt out or are interested in opting out. We even fewer that have general questions. By putting a sense of urgency about timing, it's probably immaterial in terms of our planning at this stage. So we're talking about so few. Jeff, is that fair? I mean, we're talking about very few customers opting out. We're planning on 5% or whatever it is opting out. If it's 1% more or less, at any given time, we'll be able to adjust our plans accordingly.
Great. And then does Edison send out any, does it allow its customers to have online billing?
Yep.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So for folks who have online billing, they're probably used to absorbing all of their utility bill-related information that way. So, is there some way to access those people apart from mailing?
As far as I know, Edison's still taking care of all the billing. So any customer that has a service account with Edison, that the online billing, they'll still take care of that online.
Yeah, that's my question is, if somebody has online billing, they probably are looking at their mail for information that affects their utilities.
Makes sense. Okay.
They're probably throwing away everything that comes in the mail if they get that stuff. And some people who are outside the area for the summer would be reliant upon their online billing to keep track of what's happening with their account. So what I'm really asking is, can we get Edison's cooperation to communicate digitally with people who have online billing?
Okay. We have been coordinating with Edison on all of our notices. They send out notices too. I'll find out specifically how they handle their online folks and their electric format.
The, in terms of electronic notices, because I'm on electronic billing, you literally have to click on the notice if you want to see it. I almost never click on the notice, and I doubt many people do. So I don't know how.
But you probably don't open your mail either.
I do. I just opened this today from Southern California Edison.
A slight footnote on that. You know, the law prescribes that you have to give the four notices, and they are to be mailed. Now, if you wanted Edison's cooperation, they might be delighted to cooperate with you, but my advice would be not to ask them to send out any notices regarding opt-out electronically, because they might really take you up on that, and once you give them an inch, they'll probably take the proverbial mile. So what we're trying to do is go by the letter of the law here, do what we have, not the minimum we have to do, but what we are absolutely required to do. And it probably would put Edison in a precarious position, too, because I don't think they want to jeopardize their position with the CPUC on whether they've gone too little or too far to notice customers about your business as opposed to their business.
Well, and I don't know whether they've ever done this before or not, but could SCE send out a notice encouraging people to opt out?
They can't do that legally yet, but they'd love to be able to do that.
Okay. What we will check is if Edison is willing to send out our notice via that mechanism. Mm-hmm. So we'll add that to our... I understand.
Yeah. Okay. Someone understands me.
Yes, the only comment I had is, you know, we point out the 3% savings on content, but then we go into you can do a greener carbon-free solution, but we don't say at the exact same price as Edison. And I think that's what's, if I read this, I'd say I can pay a bunch more and have carbon-free. If we are encouraging people to opt up, we should really be encouraging people to opt up, I think, in the letters.
Okay.
That would be my one. Otherwise,
I would agree.
Yeah. All right. Anything else? Any other questions about community outreach right now?
Let me just check with our information officer.
If the letter's already gone to the printer, then no.
Well, it's the first batch.
Yeah.
It's the first letter.
So what I'll do is I'll continue to work with Erica and Katie on messaging and language.
Okay.
I don't know if it's just here, but I have on our next agenda to talk about what the city's going to do as far as which product we're going to go with. And it'd be really great, I don't know if we can get a slide or something that gives a sense of what the difference is, not just on generation, but what's the deal? Because it's going to be easier to opt up if it shows it's 1.5% or 2%. So I don't know if we can give an estimate or a range on that. It's our June 6th meeting, but it would be, so I need it the week before for the agenda. Or at least a brief description and then a slide just before. And Jay and I can get that out there, I think, pretty easily.
Jeff, I assume we've got the city's load information?
Yes, we do.
We'll put together a package for each of the three cities.
That'd be great.
We'll do so before the end of the month.
Great.
And I understand what the need is there.
And it's a good time to do education, right? You said we have this on the agenda, we talk about it. If someone wants to come, you're welcome to. I think we can also handle it. So.
Yeah, and we'll have a discussion of it. If you, the other two cities agendize something, if you need any additional support, let us know. But otherwise, we'll provide the hard copy, as it were,
perfect,
in electronic form.
Great, anyway. Thank you.
All right. Additionally, you had some information on the short-term or the 2018 RA. Edison did send up their Tier 1 advice letter on our behalf and theirs to the PUC. The PCI exit fee, we don't know anything more than you do, and nobody knows entirely how that's going to all play out. The schedule for the PUC to settle in on next year's exit fee PCIA is July. I think most of those watching the proceedings would bet against that happening in July.
That's a draft.
Yes.
First step. Right.
And then we provided you with some additional information. One of the things we talked about the last meeting was the net energy, net energy metering program. And frankly, we didn't get all the information we needed from Edison in time to make this agenda. You would ask for to understand the budget implications of various policy approaches. We don't have that today. We do expect to have it by the next meeting, and we'll have a robust discussion about NEM and different choices you have entailing that program. At the very least, as you remember, your new NEM customers will be no worse than what they currently get under Southern California Edison. We'll talk, obviously, about budget and staffing shortly. Jeff, can you update the board on procurement?
Sure. So on the RA side, since Tom brought that up, you didn't have to procure RA because of that. But actually, we did finally agree, we agreed last week to what the quantities would be of RA to be procured. Previously, there was an agreement on price. There was an agreement on methodology for how we would calculate the volume, but we hadn't actually agreed to that. But that's now done, built into the financial models, so that is good. The fixed price energy blocks for 2018 are all procured at this point. It's been an interesting time in the market. It's actually been moving up here. And I think Don will probably talk about this a little bit. We get into the budget discussions. Still, everything's all good and feasible and everything, but market prices did tick up just a little bit, but that's all done. And we're now in the process of procuring the renewable energy, both in-state and out-of-state, as well as the carbon-free. And I think we've got the out-of-state renewables done at this point. I need to double-check that, but I think we're done. There's lots of in-state renewables for sale right now. The IOUs, all three IOUs at this point, are in some various process of selling their excess renewable energy, largely due to CCA formation and that. So there's plenty of PCC1, and the pricing we're seeing out there is all consistent with expectations on that. So that remains underway. So we're looking good. It's in good shape.
The extent of my update.
Okay, thank you.
On the net energy metering program, the discussion we had earlier about making a decision if we're going to true up everyone on a particular month and then keep them all on that one month, which makes it so much easier going forward. We'll discuss that at the same time, the next meeting.
Since it's not an agendized item, and I don't think it's a time-sensitive one, why don't we just roll that all into discussion about timing?
Okay. Sounds good. Okay. And that takes us to the draft budget.
Don Dame, you're on.
Okay, let's go to the next slide, please, Ben. This is a preview of the budget that will be fine-tuned and finalized and presented to you next month for your consideration and approval. What we've done with it, we've started with the TEA pro forma and TEA's estimates of customer count, total megawatt hour sales, total cost of wholesale power supply, and then the cost of the vendors and the various consultants, and added on to that use of CVAG facilities, co-sharing of CVAG staff, and then the addition of two new staffers that when the budget is approved, I think the flyers are out on the beach right now, and when the budget is approved, those applications will be reviewed and the like. So I wanted to go over that with you and give you some update. The numbers, as Tom foreshadowed, the numbers are moving around just a teeny bit with regard to power costs and revenue sales, but there's no material change to the result. So let's shift into the next one. This is the next slide. So your total revenues, this is DCE, not what your customers will pay. Desert Community Energy's revenues for fiscal year 19 will be about $71.7 million. And you can see where the lion's share of that goes. About 85% of it goes to buying the product that you're selling on behalf of your customers. About 6.5%, $4.6 million will go to all your operating costs. That pays your vendors, your data management fee to Calpine, your mailing out of the flyers and the like, and other customer notices to keep your business running. And then when the smoke clears at the end of the year, you got about $6.5 million of retained earnings to use for adding to your war chest, reserves, local programs, and the like. Candidly, it'll probably, before you get heavy into any programs, you'll probably want to wait a handful of years so you build up a substantial handful of cash reserves. And one of the things that cash does give you in this business, it gives you a lot of resilience to unexpected market moves, and cash allows some fluidity to take care of those. If we look at the summary for this fiscal year, and I might stand up here and go through this to make it a little easier to understand, just so that we know what we're talking about. The bogey here is this is what your expected customers give, given TEAs and our 10% estimated opt-out rate. So this is certainly 90% of the load for you. That Edison would have otherwise served. Edison, if they continued without DCE starting up, would collect about $94.17 million from these customers over the next August through June period.
91 or 94?
94. Yeah, that's 94.17. Yeah. Thank you, Kathleen. If Edison were to give a 3% discount on this generation side component, keep in mind that the total bill to the customer is about twice this amount to pay for the transportation cost, mm-hmm. too. This is the energy cost only. With a 3% discount, what you want to charge your customers, or the revenues you want to receive from your customers, are $91.34 million. So that gives you, what are we targeting? And to set our rates and base our procurement on, and what it will be able to do and receive that $91.349 million. We also need to reduce that by the PCIA and the franchise fees. Edison is going to charge for those. It's not going on your side of the bill. It's going on their side of the bill. They'll receive those revenues. They're not going to be run through your cash register at all. So what you're going to receive physically coming into DCE, if our forecasts are entirely correct, is $71.7 million. Okay, so that's our revenue base coming in. And you'll see one line item here. I have a working capital loan, if any. We've omitted it in this budget, and the calculations are done on an accrual basis. So revenues are received in the month in which the power is sold, and costs are incurred in the month in which you're either paying vendors or incurring the cost of electricity, the wholesale supply side. And that wholesale cost for the 11 months in your first fiscal year, approximately $60.6 million. And your operating costs, I'll go through them line by line, but your operating costs, those are all your non-power costs, sharing staff and facilities with CFAG, two new positions, sending out flyers, doing some marketing, some legal support.
That all totals to $4.6 million. Basically, you add your 60.6 and your 4.6, and you get a total power and operating cost of $65.2 million. You subtract that from your total revenues of $71.7 million, and you end up with about $6.5 million in estimated assets and reserves available at the end of the first year. Yeah, Shelley.
Don, when we talked before, I mentioned that some of the cities, for example, have a utility tax. Does that show up in the $94 million, or is that really on top of
that? That does not show up here. If there is a 3% tax, for example, if your city has a tax, Edison will charge that tax to its side of the bill. It'll show up in the Edison bill. You'll add that tax to your side of the bill. And my understanding is you will convey that 3% to whatever the appropriate municipalities are. It'll be a wash from your customer's perspective, but so all of the municipalities will receive whatever taxes that are due from a utility user's tax perspective.
Thanks.
And if we just take this a little bit at a time, you'll see that the Desert Community Energy staff and part-time general counsel services, this includes two new positions. These are fully loaded costs. Two new positions, a CCA program manager and a CCA accountant, and then shared use of various CBAG positions and some legal support. That's a fully loaded number, just under $500,000. Other contract labor, including groups like Lean, are included in this group, and I'm in this group too. And then we've got CBAG-related staff and facility support. This is the A&G here, the use of the copy machines and the like. And Gary's gonna make sure everything works copacetic here for you on the facilities, $174,000. The direct business support is, you've seen something almost exactly this number before. This is the payment to Southern California Edison for their share of the billing charges, the payment to Calpine for doing the data management and conveying the usage data back and forth between between DCE and Edison, and all the TEA work on the power procurement and balancing and interfacing and scheduling and dispatch side of the house, $3.7 million. The launch support, you're seeing a negative number in here, and Shelley and I were discussing this earlier. That, in essence, is like a loan for this year. So what we have embedded in there is there's $500,000 that Calpine has loaned to you up front to pay for various consultants and do the four mailings that are going out, plus $100,000 that is the bond for the CPUC. So that's $600,000 sitting there. We've got a plug number of about $300,000 for all CBAG support prior to your launch date. And then there's some charges accruing from TEA for all its support and activities prior to that launch date as well. So that's a handful of dollars that are getting, some with interest and some without interest, that are getting repaid over 48 equal installments starting in November this year. Why this is negative is Calpine and TEA have also agreed to defray their monthly services charges for up to 3 months, August, September, and October. And if you add up the Calpine plus the TEA services charges for those 3 months, that's a significant amount of money. And so they're defraying that, and those costs are getting spread out over 4 years instead of all during the current fiscal year. So it's showing as a negative this year. This is the only year you'll see a negative. It'll go up essentially twice that next year when you won't have the negative and you'll have the $161,000. And then we've got a miscellaneous item for CalCCA membership dues, which are about, I think, $100,000. I think it's $100,000 a year, plus if you want to have any other local sponsorships of the like. And then we've added a contingency amount here for things like insurance and things that come up that are uninspected. That total cost, to put this in context, that shows your operating cost at about $4.12 a megawatt hour. If you take this loan out and add 80 cents to that in, which is closer to what you'll see next year, that's about $5 a megawatt hour. That's kind of right in the ballpark for what other CCAs are doing. I'm working with the Valley Clean Energy folks up in Davis. Their expected first-year total operating costs are about $5.75 a megawatt hour. And they're a little teeny bit smaller than you folks are, but just to put that in context. So let's move on. Any questions so far? If we have any questions on this panel, we'll shoot right into the next slide. Some of the pictures are a little more interesting. So now if we extend that last chart out two more years and add fiscal year 20 and fiscal year 21, we see a representation of what your total revenues look like. That's basically the top of the green area of this curve. That green area is the expected assets you're going to have on hand at the end of the year. And out here for this one, that little block there is about $40.2 million. That's at the end of year three. That's in addition. That does not include the 3% discount that you've given to your customers. Okay, that's what's sticking on this side of the table, so to speak. And you can see the operating costs are the smallest slice of that. And of course, the overwhelming share of that is wholesale power costs. Okay, let's go to the next slide. This just takes the green portion and says this is what's growing. I do want to put a caveat on this. This is showing about $40 million at the end of the year three. We're still working. When we did the shift from calendar year to fiscal year, we adjusted some of the loads just a little bit. We're still looking at the revenue side of this. My expectation, and I'll show you a slide on the first year, is that this slope is going to come down a little bit, and instead of $40 million, it's going to be something between $27 and $30 million at the end of year three, but I'll show you that in just a second. Next slide. So this kind of alludes to those adjustments. Wholesale power prices have trended up about $3 a megawatt hour in the last handful of months. You can remember back last year, we talked about real low natural gas prices. Aliso Canyon, which is the largest natural gas storage facility in California, incidentally, is highly derated. They're not allowing injections. The markets interpreted that as thus there's going to be a gas shortage in the summer. Electricity at the margin on peak days is driven by gas prices. If gas prices go up, electricity prices go up. And that's the lion's share of what's driving this $3 a megawatt hour increase. I think RA procurement might have been a teeny bit more than you were expecting, but it was in the ballpark. So the lion's share is gas price increases. And that can have a reciprocal effect, too. You know, you buy forward to hedge against that. Gas prices decline. Gas prices are a buck cheaper at the California border than they are on this side of the border because of that injection constraint. We're looking again, as I talked about, maybe as much as a $3 a megawatt hour decline in revenues. We'll take a closer look at that as we tune for next month's budget. So these numbers will all converge together. Again, it doesn't materially affect the results, but it does reduce the handful of assets that you have in the hand at the end of year three. We'll be further tuning the staffing, the CBAG board, and outside vendor inputs. I think we're really close on all these numbers right now. That's going to be a minimal part of the effort between now and June. A relatively small load forecast reduction, that's going to be more, in my opinion, going to be more than washed away by something substantially less than 10% in the opt-outs. And we'll perform some sensitivities, and I've got a couple of charts here that I'm going to show you a little sensitivity to this. Next slide. So here's just the sensitivity to load changes. I know we've talked about, one of our biggest exposures is our opt-out rate, and it indeed is a large exposure, but if your load goes up or down, your revenues go up or down, and your wholesale power costs go up and down. What tends to stay stable is all your non-power operating costs. It costs about as much to be a 50-megawatt CCA from an operating perspective as it does to be a 100-megawatt CCA. So you can see the slopes on these lines aren't relatively dramatic, but they are positive. So you can see a little bit of load change here. This is the fiscal year 2019, and there's that. That's that $6.5 million bogey right there that we were talking about. If loads go up, yeah, we get a little bit more. If loads go down, it gets a little less. But there's not a dramatic sensitivity. So if we get only 5% opt-outs versus 10%, we'll be in that particular range right there. It's going to help us. It's going to help us out a little bit. Okay. Next slide, but not particularly sensitive. And this is the one that gives the two. This is the little more sensitive one. This is where the more impact comes, and that's for revenues and costs. If you've got a residual of $10 million at the end of the day, every time your costs go up a dollar, that $10 million go down a dollar. Okay. And I didn't include the other side of these lines. Obviously, if costs go down or revenues go up, the world is a better place from a residual situation. So here's where we stood in the board package that you got. That's the $6.5 million number right there. The light blue line represents if costs go up, okay, up to 5%. The orange line is if revenue goes down 5%, and the purple line is the combination of the two. Okay, costs go up and revenue go down, kind of the worst of all worlds from a business perspective. Based on the latest data, working with TEA staff last Friday, based on the latest data, we're thinking that $6.5 million, not including potentially only having 5% opt-out or maybe even less than that next year, that $6.5 million goes down to about $4 million residual on an accrual basis at the end of the year. This is one of the areas that we'll tune in for you as we come into next month. That's still pretty good news for coming out of the first year in the chute on a business of this magnitude and complexity. So that's what we're seeing, and that's primarily due, again, to that additional $3 a megawatt hour revenue decline. That's about a 3% decline. The sensitivities are for every 1% of revenue decline is about $900,000 hit on the residual. And on a cost side, for every 1% increase in cost, there's about a $600,000 hit on the residual. That's just the slopes of the lines. So what are the next steps? We're going to continue to work with TEA and fine-tune and review the assumptions and calculations. Again, we're right in the ballpark, very, very close as we speak. We're going to double-check those projections of average dollar per megawatt-hour revenue. We're going to confirm the average dollars per megawatt hour, average weighted power supply costs. Supply costs vary by hour, by day, by month. But for these purposes, we weight those all out and then compress them into one number. Okay, and we're going to make sure we get everything accounted for, all the various capacity and energy components of your wholesale supply. We're going to make any adjustments that you request or any extra slides that you want to see from today's presentation. And then we'll prepare everything for you and send out a package very similar to what you've got this time, but in final format, together with a staff report for your consideration and approval at the June meeting. That's the long and the short of the budget.
Questions?
Oh, he's looking at me. I do have a couple of questions.
Okay.
And thank you. That was all very clear. My first question is kind of off the record. It's explain the use of the word bogey.
Yeah. Oh, why?
Because that's not what I think of as a bogey.
That was my first question.
That was Shelley's first question. We use a bogey, it's a target. Okay, so here's where we're starting. It's our baseline.
That's my target.
So that's the way that was used, is that gives us our initial off the block starting point.
Thank you. So from all that's been explained to me, if the PCIA has changed, it would change next year, right?
Mm-hmm.
So in these projections, not for 18-19, but, well, I guess it is 18-19, and 19-20, how optimistic are we being about that potential change? Are we thinking worst case scenario, best case scenario, is something in between?
I think, I'll let Jeff chime in as well. We're doing what we really think we expect, and maybe a little bit conservative on that. We've had a pretty big hit in the PCI from last year to this year. And having seen a similar question from you in advance, you know, it does lend itself. I mean, the PCIA, I mean, let's be off the record. If the PCIA was big enough, there wouldn't be anybody sitting in this room here. So it's a legitimate concern. If the PCIA was 5 or 6 cents a kilowatt hour, there's no way you'd consider starting this business absent just being environmental zealots and wanting to do the right thing for your community. But from a business perspective, it wouldn't make a lot of sense. We have room now, even with the PCIA, as we think it's going to go over time. Not as we know, because the regulation can meander just about anywhere. It'll be watched and monitored. The idea of the PCIA is to balance those over-market costs so that they're not borne by Edison's customers with the current market values. And if it is done correctly, in a perfect calculation, your rates would be almost exactly what Edison's rates are. So you're somewhat protected. So if the PCIA goes up, it's because market costs are going up as well. And those are going to affect Edison as well as you. So it has somewhat of a tempering effect, one on the other. The other thing to consider, because right now everything does look good based on everything we think we know about the PCIA, but you have a business, as you heard Jeff, you've spent millions of dollars already buying power. You've got notices ready to go out, and you've got customers that are ready to buy from you. Your business, once it's established and has those established revenues, you even have much more credibility at the CPUC, when you say, I don't like the way you're doing the PCIA, this is not fair. So CCAs are not arguing that the PCIA should go away. We'd all like to see it go away, but it does need to be fair. Your concern is legitimate. I think the numbers bear out our best reasonable conservative expectations of what the PCIA is going to do. Jeff, do you want to dovetail with that?
I wouldn't add to that. Yeah.
So if they surprise us, looks like we're planning enough reserves here that we have some wiggle room. Is that what you would want me to see?
You know, that's a good way to put it. You're given your to go to the large ball. You're going to have a total cost advantage over Edison's generation rate of somewhere in the range of 13 to 15%. So you're going to give your customers 3% of that. So as we're showing for the first year, which is a little skimpier than the subsequent years, you've got about a 9% reserve margin. So they can eat into that with another $1, $2, or $3, or $4 a megawatt hour. I can't imagine it doing that, but they could do that. I can't predict it, and I couldn't guarantee it. But if it does go up, Edison's rates will indeed go up as well. So all the boats move in the same direction. But yes, you do have a cushion to weather that storm.
Thank you. Then I wanted to shift topics. So if anybody else has more questions about that, the other thing I wanted to ask about was the shared seabed positions. And if we could go over to attachment 2, it would be helpful to me just to go through that list and tell me who's who and what they do.
Executive director, he doesn't do much. Director 2 is...
Okay, so we should cut. Let's cut that out.
Easy. And the most expensive per hour, so serves two purposes in cutting that out. We've applied, and I don't know if we provided you with the estimated time here. I can get that for you if you'd like. But, for example, executive director and director Seabag. Director Seabag is Katie. So Tom and Katie, as an example, have estimated 20% of their time be charged and be used for DCE next fiscal year.
But Director Seabag is Katie.
Yeah, that's six rows down.
And that's a 20% of her time.
And 20% of mine. And as your colleague, Mr. Jonathan, saw, we invited him in particular, given his interest and background, to sit down with our finance director. What CBAG does is charge for actual time spent. So we all fill out timesheets, and we charge now DCE as well as CVCC, actual hours spent for those organizations.
Those are fully weighted hours.
And they're fully weighted.
So these are estimates?
They are.
Great. That helps me. I didn't know that.
In terms of other names, the second row down is titled Director 2 DCE. This is the program manager that Don referenced. And this person is assumed to be 100%.
Right. This is the new
hire. Yes. The finance director, I presume, is at 10%. That's Gary, but it could be less than that. The accounting manager is also assumed to be 100%.
Mm-hmm. Actually, it's 80, Tom.
Thank you.
Is it 80%?
Mm-hmm.
Is that also a new hire?
It is. Mm-hmm. I mentioned Director Seabag already. Management Analyst is Ben. And I don't know what we've assumed for you. Do you know, Don?
50%.
Thank you. Program Assistant 2, I believe, is Linda. Linda, we don't have enough time here for you at all. Don, do you know the percentage on that?
I don't have my spreadsheet in front of me, but that does look too small. But it might have only been like 10% or 5%.
Governmental Projects Manager is Erica behind me. And again, a relatively small amount of time. And the Accounting Assistant is another position that we have in the office, Cindy. And again, a relatively small amount of time. These are estimates, and what I can share with you is if Katie and I had made these estimates a year ago, they would have been, for this current fiscal year, we would have assumed less time than we've already spent.
Sure.
We spent a lot more time in the last 6 months than I would have ever imagined, hence for our desperate call for help with hiring two positions that are largely dedicated to DCE.
Which makes sense. So this is very helpful because when I first looked at this and I saw the same numbers going off into the future, it didn't make sense to me because, of course, you are spending more time now then you will probably need to spend 18 months from now. But what I'm hearing you say is these are estimates, the timesheets as to reality will be what actually drives the costs. And of course, after a year's experience, then that informs the next year's budget.
It does, and my experience with hiring people in the desert is we're not quite sure we know what we're going to get. And if you've seen the advertisement for program manager, it has a very wide salary range. We're hopeful that we get somebody with even 10% of the experience of a non-dame, which I would be happy with. Or I don't believe we're going to get that sort of person in the desert, but it's a possibility. And the higher level skill we have there, the less time you'll see from Katie and I in particular. We flatline these over the next 3 years because we don't know exactly how the recruitment's going to play out. And Don will tell you, Don and the entire team provided me with a detailed look at an organizational chart, and my recommendation based on what the board has told me is keep cost low. We want to keep our cost as low as possible to create the greatest margin, as it were, in the first few years to give you more opportunity later on to do creative things on the program side. So this is, in my opinion, a fairly bare-bones budget. My get, hopefully, we come in under this with respect to CVAG's time. With respect to CVAG's position on this, Kathleen, you weren't here for the initial discussions on how you could set this up. And the board explored, the advisory committee at that time explored a number of options. Jump in with somebody else, Lancaster, Ranch Mirage, or West Riverside County, or set up three individual CCAs. Note that CVAG is agnostic about it. There's no benefit. There's very little benefit to the CVAG's budget other than a slight sharing of overhead cost.
At this point, you might wish we had taken one of those other choices.
Yeah, well, the past few months have been a challenge, that's for sure. And Katie and the whole staff, and thankfully we've had Don and the TEA team on board to help us through what's been a difficult startup. We thought it would be relatively easy 6 months ago, and it hasn't been. So that's a long answer to your
question. No, that's very helpful. So I think I have 2.5 questions left. On this hiring issue, in terms of your pessimism about finding someone in the desert, are you thinking about finding someone who might want to be in the desert?
We're doing both. We're recruiting with kind of a conventional print in the desert, but we're also on various online services nationwide. And with respect to these positions, particularly the program manager, we're utilizing Lean and Cal CCA to advertise within the industry, as those in IID and other places I'm certainly finding there's a lot of turnover in the industry, as those that were working for the investor-owned utilities are realizing that they're not going to be doing the same thing, perhaps, in 10 years. And so there's a bit of a shakeup in the industry. Is that fair? California?
Yes, it is.
Yeah. Great.
So we may pick up somebody that is perhaps based very close by or somebody that's willing to come to the desert. I wish we were recruiting in January, however.
So once we have this telephone number that people are supposed to call when they have questions, who answers?
Yeah, it will be, yes. It'll go to a call center starting, I think, June 5th.
Yes.
So that'll be the day that enrollment letters go. So if you get your letter and you call the toll-free, you'll get a call center, and they have frequently asked questions and information about our program, and they're all prepped. the toll-free number actually works now, and if you call it now, you'll reach us.
And just so you don't leave here with a misunderstanding, we haven't made it very clear, that is the number. That's the number whether you want to opt out mm-hmm. or you have questions. Mm-hmm. We'll make that more clear okay. in future material. And there's a decision tree that Calpine will operate. We're expecting, frankly, very few questions, but the questions that they get will be answered by trained staff by Calpine to do this up and down the state, and then have been counseled on how RCCA is slightly, usually different than other places. And if they can't get an answer, they're directed to CVAG, and we could hopefully answer the question or rely on our consultant team to do so.
Great, thanks. And then lastly, I just remembered this question because in the presentation you said because in essence you're loaning us certain startup costs, in the second year we should expect that to be doubled roughly.
Oh, yeah. Let me go through it. You're on the page, you're on the full sheet.
I'm comparing the first year to the second year, and what's confusing me is it doesn't look double.
You're talking about the 539.
Well, it's almost doubled because you went from a negative to a positive, so you've got to take the absolute value of the difference between the two, which is about $900,000, right?
Just to make you, so everybody, so we've got in the budget, it's identified as a negative number. It becomes a reverse, a mirror image of that as a positive.
Because we have to pay it back. Okay.
Yeah. That's what I meant by doubling. Yeah, the negative becomes a positive, so the difference between the two numbers doubles.
Okay. So, in essence, most of what's on this launch support in year two is paying for year one, but there's a little extra.
Yeah, let me explain that. There are several categories of launch support. Calpine has got the $500,000 that they loan to DCE plus the $100,000 CPUDC bond for $600,000. We're assuming pre-launch support from CVAG and myself, which totals $300,000, and then we've got pre-launch support from TEA, which I think, subject to check, is about $340,000 or $350,000. You add those numbers together. Some have an interest component, and some don't. Those pre-launch services get paid back starting in the budget in November of this year with 48 equal payments, whether there's interest or not. Now, there's another component, which is why this is negative, is Calpine and TEA are going to hold in abeyance their services charges for 3 months, August, September, and October. That's a pretty substantial chunk of change. Those are going to get paid over 12 months starting in November. But this budget year, it drives that number negative. So it's an advantage for them to do that for you this year. And that's why the number doubles or becomes as a positive sign in front of it next year as opposed to a negative sign.
If you wanted, we could probably do a recap of just that one item showing the various components.
I will detail that out graphically and tabular-wise so that everybody understands what's going on there.
We may do that in the context of cash flow discussion. This is an accrual-based budget. We've always discussed, you have always discussed with our consultants providing information, how much money is required up front, who might provide that funding. And we have not, as you know, you have not taken action on taking out a startup loan. We have discussed the idea of
credit yet.
Well, However, perhaps you have some influence over the city of Cathedral City.
True.
We have discussed the idea of going to a local bank, going to our new bank, Valley, who understands this business and views these as hardly risky undertakings. They've done a number of CCAs and are very positive about them. We've discussed CVAC or CBCC. We've discussed this internally, providing a loan. Essentially, we are, and so is TEA. DCE has no money, and we have been providing this up front. We're doing, once we've got the budget much closer to being done and presented for your consideration, we're also doing a cash flow analysis to understand. Thank you very much, TEA, for holding in abeyance charges for a few months. Thank you, CVAC, put on different hats here for essentially a no-cost loan. And Calpine, thank you for the $500,000, but we are paying for that. Mm-hmm. That does have a 5%, I believe, interest charge. We will bring to you at some point, all right, here's the cash flow situation, and decide how much working capital, if any. I think there'll need to be some working capital needed early on in the process, but that will be another action item on your agenda, if not the next month, the following month.
That's a fair representation.
Don and I talked about this earlier, and if I understood it correctly, the expenses get paid at the end of the month, but the revenue takes 2 months.
Yeah.
So there's always going to be a
We're worried about it more from day one when we have no cash.
Eventually, you have working capital, and it's less
easier,
of a deal.
It's easier once there is some cash.
Yes. Anything else?
Tip for me.
I have a couple of questions. When will the time of day variances be available for the local CCA to put into the schedule? You know, the pricing.
Well, right now, and correct me if I'm wrong, but right now we're going to use the same representations that SCE has. So, and indeed, many of SCE's tariffs, even on the local distribution and transmission side, vary by time of day. So it's not just the energy side of the equation, but DCE's tariffs are going to mirror the Edison tariffs with the same time periods, except on the generation side with a 3% discount to Edison's rates.
Well, and those will still mirror the time periods, but they'll just be 3% lower.
Yeah.
Is that an issue that is normal for a CCA to look at and change because of the difference between Edison, big area, CCA, local?
I can answer it.
It's a really insightful
question. Yeah, it is.
I mean, it's always tempting to look at that. The difficulty here is we don't have any control over what Edison does with its time-varied distribution and transmission rates. And my opinion is if we try to vary from that, we're going to really confuse customers. They're going to go, why is this on peak over here, and why is this off peak with DCE? So I think it's what we call in economics a saddle point. We don't want to be there, but that's where we're sitting.
Well, you would also create winners and losers. So instead of everybody looking at, oh, I'm getting a 3% savings, now, you know, somebody may actually get a 10% savings. Somebody might actually be 10% higher. And I'm making those numbers up. Yeah. I don't know what they would actually be. And
it would be the kind of thing that we could look at down the road.
Absolutely.
Once everything gets settled.
Yes.
Okay. Second question, if you'll bear with me. When would we expect to be in the market, for example, to negotiate something on geothermal with the contractors out here?
I would say no later than 2020 and potentially even sooner than that. Probably sometime in 2019 would be my guess in the second half of the year.
And when can we get access to the public benefit funding that customers pay in?
If I understand that, number one is you have access to that now, and that access remains. There is, at some point in time, the possibility that DCE may want to oversee the use of those funds. You will have to be, you will have to use an entity like Marine Clean Energy, which has demonstrated its capability to do that to the satisfaction of the CPUC, or you will have to do what Marin did to get the CPUC to allow you the administration of those funds. And that's probably similar to what Jeff said. That may be something you jawbone over a little later next year or the year after, you know, after you get your sea legs a little bit here on this.
Thank you. Yep.
Okay. No action on this is necessary. Certainly if you have questions between now and the next agenda preparation, send them our way. We'll do our best to address them.
Thank you.
Next item.
That takes us to item, and obviously Kate's not doing this.
Jeff is going to do this one.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah. So in your board packet, there was a energy risk management policy that's proposed for approval today. Go to the next slide, Benjamin. The energy risk management policy, first off, is not intended to be an enterprise-wide risk management policy. It's really focused on those risks that arise as a result of engaging in wholesale market procurement, being out procuring wholesale power supplies, running in the financial aspects of that. So it's focused on the procurement. And really what it does at a high level is it lays out the goals and objectives for the organization. So what we've got in there is that at least in the early years is to have competitive rates with Edison, and also to build financial reserves to be able to establish that credit worthiness, to build up that rating day fund, to be able to go out and do the long-term procurement. What it also does is identifies the risks that you face in operating in wholesale markets and the means of mitigating those risks. And then it really lays out the framework of controls and oversight, if you will, for managing those risks, as well as it prescribes how you will monitor, measure, and report out those risks. And really the key part of that is it does set up what's termed a risk management team in the policy that's responsible for the day-to-day oversight, if you will, of implementing the risk management policy. And I didn't put this in the slide, but the risk management team would be comprised. You'd have voting members that would include Tom and Katie, so as the executive director, Katie in her role, the assistant executive director of administrative services, so basically the CFO type person. The program manager is in there, and then it has two outside persons. One TEA would attend, but as a non-voting member of the committee, that would most likely be myself. And then there's also a provision for an outside representative to be on the committee as a voting member. And that's really intended, and that can be flexible. Some CCAs have done that, others have not. In large part, it depends on probably who the program manager is or program director that you hire, the depth and breadth of experience that they bring to the table. So they have the overall responsibility for doing this. I think that's probably it as far as the highlights go. So really what is on the kind of the framework that gets laid out in this and in our approach to managing risk is really having a financial model of the CCA. So, you know, Don has talked about having a budget, which is static. It's a snapshot in time. But really what we advocate is that make that a living, breathing document so you're continually updating that as you go through time, as load changes, as you procure energy supplies, as market prices change. And you're continually asking yourselves, you know, what does that financial projection look like today based off of everything we know? And tomorrow you're updating it again. And you know, the day-to-day moves are a little bit like looking at a 401k plan or a 457 plan. It's not too interesting. But again, it's trying to set that framework in place to look at it through time. And then you're also doing stress analysis. So you're not just looking, Kathleen, you were talking before about, you know, PCI and PAM, which is, you know, obviously a key risk in here. But you're also just stressing that through time, both on a probability base, you know, given how market prices are moving today, you know, what might they do in the future, as well as just discrete stress scenarios. So what happens if the PCIA does go up 20% type of a thing? How does that, you know, make our financial projections look? And then you're asking yourselves, well, what kind of hedges can we do? What can we do to mitigate those risks where we can? So it sets up that framework. And so really what we're doing, and really from the beginning of this, is, you know, setting the target, and for most CCAs that's end of year financial reserves to build that up, defining that risk metric, then, you know, what probability do we want to being able to achieve that? So again, you want a high probability. You want to track that metric through time, so we'll actually generate reports, we'll provide it to the risk management team, so on a monthly basis, and actually on demand it can be more frequent, but at least on a monthly basis we would provide this updated financial snapshot. We'd provide an update on, you know, what's the probability of meeting your financial reserve target and those types of things. And then again, getting into the steps to reduce the risk of not meeting the target through portfolio management and procurement. So that's really what the framework of this is. The other thing that is in there too is the intent is to provide quarterly reports back to the board on how things are going and providing that feedback.
I've got a question.
Yes.
Is there a reason this isn't just done at the board level on a monthly basis?
Well, I think, you know, at this level, it does get down into some tactical implementation. So it's not just a policy, it is obviously a policy, but actually the implementation of the policy is gets into, you want to have people that are more focused on the market, have the time to spend on being in the market and immersed in that, and then are charged with the overall day-to-day management of it. So typically how it's worked out is the board sets the policy, the board sets the goals, and then delegates the risk management team to actually go out and execute that and the tactical implementation, if you will.
On page 12, where it shows the membership of the risk management team, mm-hmm. Who is the director of environmental resources?
That's Katie, the intent was Katie, if I grabbed the title correctly.
And I apologize, what we used in the budget had a different nomenclature.
Yeah, the intent was obviously Tom, just reading left to right, was Tom, the new hire that's been discussed about, Katie, is it Gary?
Gary.
I'm trying to remember. The TEA rep most likely will be me, and again, that would be non-voting. And then my presumption is that the outside rep would be Don, but I don't know if that's been.
And just small thing, back on Dan, I think the appendix references need to be changed because what's called B in the text became A, and what's called C became B.
And
it's proofread, but
yes.
Well, I went to look for it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good catch.
But it's a beautiful document, and I was really excited to see it. Did I forget to say that?
I think that's the first time I've ever heard it called a beautiful document.
It's a beautiful document.
Write that down.
Policy documents.
I will pass that along.
I think it's beautiful.
There we go.
So our director of risk control is a woman named Carrie Kerrigan, and she refers to this. She has said it's elegant.
It is. Okay. So I would like to move that we affirm the elegance of this policy so you can go back and tell her that.
I will let her know. She will appreciate that.
That is a motion to adopt.
I'll second that.
Okay, all those in favor?
Aye.
Thank you.
And it is adapted. And related to this, you probably got a sense of the professionalism at TEA, and it reminds us they are in a nonprofit. Certainly, they don't want to lose money on this, but they're in it for a number of reasons, not always just related to making a profit and being conscious of risk and risk policy is one of those. Over lunch, Don did volunteer a tour of TEA's facility in Washington for Jeff, right, Jeff?
Yeah, it was fine. Yes, yes, he did.
But at some but point, we've got a lot of priorities over the next couple months, but at some point we may set something up for one or more board members to go up and see how this works in a real-time basis. And you see they also distinguish front office from back office and mid office and what they're doing, and be kind of curious to see how that physically works as well as functionally works.
Yeah, Tom suggested the whole month of August.
Which August, September is the best time.
Very long tour. Task by task.
Okay, from an announcement standpoint, our next board meeting is on Monday, June 18th, and this is at 2:30, and the CEDAC General Assembly meeting is coming up on Monday, June 25th at 6 p.m.